because you're jumping back into the gap. I let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Leads the country in offensive rebounding.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver, the founder, CEO, and creative mind behind BasketballImmersion.com. This is the podcast where you will hear real basketball coaching conversations. Whether you are a new or experienced coach at any level of basketball, these coaching conversations will give you practical ideas to stimulate your coaching and make what you do even better. Without any more delay, let's share the game. Very grateful to have a really good friend in Matt Driscoll, and incredible success at the University of North Florida, and incredible success, obviously turned around that program. Well, and not really even fair to say turned it around, put it on the map in the first place, and just incredible. And again, good friends, certainly biased in knowing what a tremendous coach and person you are, and, you know, just had so many life-changing experiences because of you. So I can't thank you enough for all those things you've done for me. And then clearly to come on this podcast and share some things about culture and program building and all those things that I think made you an incredibly successful coach.
Well, First of all, you know, a lot of people don't realize our background and kind of where we came from, but, you know, it was one of those things where you start talking to somebody and you just feel something. I think it's part of the business. I think some of us have that ability. I know you do as well, too, where you can tell the difference sometimes immediately between certain things. And because of that situation, a gazillion doors opened for both of us. I mean, we go up to your place and have an unbelievable tour, which really helped us during this time to help us achieve a championship because of the culture that we were able to put into place, so to speak, put into motion, going across the border to Windsor, and then you helping us get to Brock and doing all those things as well, too. And I know, you know, your teams have had great success. I know Coach Smart's teams have had great success. And so, therefore, it's been good for you. And I think because of that, you've been able to kind of parlay that into some different things as well, too, and network and meet a lot of people. And, of course, you know, having Jen, and when she was down here being pregnant, she's the vegan.
Yeah.
Now you guys are coming back for a little bit of vacation, and my wife's a vegan. So everybody's going away. But, you know, you talk about right here on my desk, pick up this card, and it's got a front and a back to it, and it starts with number one and number two, and then on the back it's got a 2A and it's got a 3. And if you look at the top, it says, from Thad Mata. And it wasn't a card from him. I was recruiting in July. We just got the job. And I only knew Thad just from the business, like a lot of us know each other. And he stopped me. I can remember like it was yesterday. We're in Cincinnati. The Adidas tournament was there. He was walking with a lady from the NCAA, who I knew very well because when I was the president of the NCAA assistant coaches, she was helping me out every year. And he stopped me and he said, hey, yada, 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 congratulations. He said, do me a favor, take down my cell. I want you to call me. I want to talk to you about your opportunity. And I was, of course, I was elated. You know, I was like, this is cool. I'm going to get a chance to talk to Thad Mata, who's got great insight being a butler, you know. And it was amazing to know that he was that comfortable and that sure that he needed to share some things with us. And the one thing that, and I took, when we won the championship, he played us twice, paid us a good sum of money to play us.
Of course he did.
And in that time, our relationship grew and grew and grew. But I took a picture of this with the championship trophy with the Nets, you know, cut out on them, and I sent it to him and to thank him. But one of the things he talked about is, I think, one of the things that really gets lost sometimes when you're taking over a program like us that's gone through the moratorium to begin Division I. Now, North Alabama is doing it this year. And or you're taking over a really, really bad situation, which most jobs, either it's really good and the guy got a better job, or it's really bad and they got rid of the guy.
Well, Baylor would be an example for that, which I'm sure we'll get into for you as well when you guys went there.
And the one thing Thad said was celebrate small victories. And I'm going to tell you what, Chris, we really did a good job of that from the beginning. Our first year, we won a tournament in Southern Miss, and you'd have thought we just won the NCAA tournament. They talk about if you believe it, you can achieve it. If you view it, you can do it. And if you see it, you can certainly be it. And our very first Sunday up in the corner of the gym, put a ladder up, we played one shining moment, and we practiced cutting down the nets. Now, that I get goosebumps right now, but that group never got to do that, so to speak.
Right.
But that ability for us to understand our culture and to start our culture. And we talk about it all the time. We're a championship level program. We act like champions. We practice like champions. We dress like champions. We do things for a certain reason. And a good example of that on the back end, Dallas Moore, he goes to Oklahoma City for his workout, the greatest Division I score in the history of Florida basketball. I don't know if you knew that. The greatest number one score in Division I basketball in the state of Florida, which is incredible. Amazing. But he goes there and they tell him, like, tuck your shirts in. This is what we do, yada, yada, yada. And he starts to giggle. And the guy looks at him and he says, do you have a problem with that? And he said, oh, no, sir. He said, I've been doing this my whole career. I even have to do it in the airports. So the guys don't understand why we do that. But, you know, there's a proper time and a place to be you. And then there's another time to be either professional or prepared for whatever comes your way. So that's something that we're really, really big on and we really, really strive to do.
Well, Coach, let's fill in the blanks a little bit for people. And those are great shares. And I know we'll get into some other great things. So, Coach,
is anybody looking at my play on the board? Are they trying to figure out what we're running on the board?
Always, Coach. Always trying to figure out what you're running.
What a great idea, though. Piece of metal cost like $6, 4 screws. You get a mat, cut it in half, and two offices can get it, and some magnets. Jeremy Shiat taught me that. So we got two offices with those boards. So we made our own.
How cool. And you did you lead the NCAA in three-point attempts in 1 year?
Yeah, it makes.
That board doesn't matter, Coach. You're just shooting it.
Yeah, we're birds of prey now. We're birds of prey. And we've really evolved, and we've evolved in our offense. And we're one of the best offensive teams in the country every year. Last year, we really failed defensively, and I really take a lot of the blame for that, though we'll talk about some other things that came into play that I think are really going to be interesting for some people that listen to this and watch this, because when you're trying to sustain success, there's some other factors that come into play that sometimes aren't seen, or even as a coach, you think you're going to get over that or you're going to be okay or whatever, and sometimes reality is a little bit greater.
Right. And this is why this is the topic for the day. I think for so many of us, coaches can relate more to your program sustaining success. And probably you have more practical advice for us in sustaining success than, say, Duke. Like, and I'm not diminishing their accomplishments, but it's easier to maintain success at Duke than it is at North Florida. So sustaining success and the different things that you've done there, I think relate more to what a high school coach or, you know, small college coach or basically any coach would be trying to do at their program as well. So excited to have you on. Real quick for people, we met in 1997 at the University of Wyoming's camp, which you alluded to at the beginning before we started. And you guys just got there. I wanted to work camps as I drove out to the University of Victoria to do my master's. And I'm so blessed and grateful that you answered the phone and you were like, come on out. And I spent 2 weeks in Wyoming working camp and getting to know you and the coaching staff, which obviously Larry Shiat was head coach at the time. And what an incredible thing that caused such an impact on my career as well. But we were reflecting on that a little bit.
You know what, Chris? And we try to encourage, and a lot of our guys, for instance, Will Wade.
Yep.
You know, he's our manager at Clemson. And now at 35, he's the head coach at LSU. He went on a camp tour. Sam Patterson, who's at Oral Roberts, went on a camp tour. Zach Friesman, who's at Winthrop right now, went on a camp tour. I just don't think a lot of people do that anymore.
They don't. They absolutely don't. I mean, it's more networking on social media and email than it is in the camp tours. Now, I know some of the NCAA regulations have made it a little bit harder to do that. Am I correct?
Not if you're a manager.
Okay.
Not if you're a manager or a Division II coach, or if you're a Division III coach like I was. I was a high school coach when I met Coach Shiat. We went to their camp. And then I started working his camps at Clemson when I was a Division III coach. And I met Dennis Felton. Dennis Felton offered me a job. That's how I met Rick Barnes. That's how I met Bobby Kennan, who's on my staff. That's how I met Bruce Evans. That's on my staff. So, you know, we get the Wyoming job, and our athletic director was the athletic director at Wyoming. So I'm a real big proponent. Shiat told me this. He said, whatever you do, do it to your best ability, and don't ever do it thinking about what might happen or what could occur, or I got to do this or I got to prove this so that those guys will look at me and say, man, if I get a job, I'm going to hire that guy. He said, just be who you are, do what you're supposed to do, and the rest will take care of itself. And that's always been, since I was a little kid, my dad always said our names on everything. And that's why I say, I still say this when I speak today on leadership. No one had cleaner bathrooms at McDonald's than I did, because I knew that our name was on that. And as silly as it sounds, my son called me about a month ago and said to me, Dad, you ought to see how he's working for college in a rec center. He's got to clean the bathroom. He said, Dad, you ought to see how clean my bathrooms are. And he kind of laughed. But in my heart, I felt like, you know what? He understands.
He got it. He understood it.
But yeah. People just don't do it. Like the head women's coach at Kent State, Todd Starkey, worked our camps. One day, Shy wanted me to take me swimming in his house. I said, Shy, I can't leave Fike. I mean, I'm responsible for a fight. And he's like, Drisk, I'm running the camp. Like, I can tell you what to do. And I said, Shy, it don't matter. Like, I'm in charge of Fike. He's like, Drisk, I got somebody to cover for you. We're going to my house. So I guess my point is, you know, too many guys are looking for the next best thing. Too many assistants want to be the head coach instead of making sure the head coach's life is easy. And that was my plight, and that will always be my plight. And I know my assistants do an unbelievable job protecting, keeping things off, doing all those things that you should do. And I look at you and I think about, like, everything that happens and everything that occurs, like Dickie Hartung, my junior college coach, this is really was a valuable lesson. We went to see a kid play. So I just got done playing for him. I went back to get my degree. He said, Drisk, you're going to be my assistant. He laid my whole life out for me. He said, you're going to be my assistant. You're going to do this. We're going to get you an assistant JV job. And then we're going to get you a job where they're hiring teachers. And then you're going to student teach there. And then when you're done student teaching, they're going to love you. They're going to hire you. It all came true. And what's great about that is that's how I met my wife.
That's amazing.
But going back to Dickie, we go to watch his kid play. He don't show up. And you know how that pisses you off. Oh, yeah. You know, you get somewhere and like the dude don't show up. So I said to Dickie, I said, man, let's go. We're about 2 hours away. And Dickie said, nah, you know what, Driss, let's just play. Let's just go get a run in while we're out here. Might as well get some exercise. I'm like, man, heck with that, coach. Let's go home. He goes, no, we're playing. So I ain't gonna argue with Dickie because he's my head coach. He's my mentor. So we play. While we're playing, this dude is like really, really good. And he was a Division III player of the year in their conference. So we don't say anything to him. We're just, people are asking us why we're there. We told him we were there. So he's one kid. He didn't show up, yada, yada. About 2 weeks later, that kid contacts coach, says, coach, I really think I'm a scholarship player. I think I'm better than I want to keep paying $40,000 a year to go to school. Bada bing, bada boom, he comes. He's player of the year for us the next year. And he gets a Division II scholarship to Brandeis or one of those Division II places up in New England, whatever it's called. But my point is, Dickie always said, you never waste a moment and nothing's ever wasted. You can always make something out of something. And I think too many people are trying to figure out, I'm going to go sit in this guy's office or I'm going to go do this with this guy. Like, just do what you're supposed to do the way you're supposed to do it and things will take care of itself.
No, that's great. I mean, great foresight. And clearly that's what you've done there at the University of North Florida. So let's get into that, coach. What are some of the things that have sustained success for you guys?
I think first and foremost is you got to have staff. And I'm getting done right now in year 10. I just got done once again doing our staff meeting, what's going to transpire in our staff meeting. And it hasn't changed much over the 10 years. It's tweaked a little bit. It's maybe some things deleted that we don't quite need back then. But my point is, our organization level and our ability to be on the same page. For instance, when we first got the job, we had a four-hour meeting about terms. Four-hour meeting. And, I mean, you talk about, you know, what's the difference between a single-single and a staggered? What do you call it, a flare or a fade?
Right.
Do you call it a gate or an elevator? Do you call it whatever it is? It don't matter. But my point is we got on the same page on everything. And the one thing Coach Drew told me leaving Baylor, one of the greatest compliments I've ever received, and I kind of already knew it in the sense that I already knew who I was as a human being, but it's nice when someone else verbalizes it to you. But he said, Drisk, you've never been a yes man. You'll never be a yes man, but you certainly were extremely loyal, and you knew when it was enough, and you knew the time that, okay, there's no more debating. And then when we got out that door, it was, this is what we're doing. And that's the way our staff is. That's the way our staff's been. I really struggle hiring an outlier, someone that's really not connected in some stretch somehow. But we've done it a little bit, but not very far out of the norm. It's just amazing. You got to have a staff, and you got to have a staff that's on the same page. Like Bruce can be a head coach, whatever you want to say it. Bobby could be a head coach, can be a head coach, no question. Coach Perkins could be a head coach, was a head high school coach, of course, so was Bobby, so was Bruce, was a Division II head coach. But all those guys can be head coaches. So it's amazing. You're 40-plus, 45-plus. We're all 45-plus years old, too. So you talk about probably up close to 100 years of experience. This is my 31st for me. So you got to have a staff that's solidified. You got to have a staff that's not afraid to have a suggestion. That's not afraid to say, change this. Too many times last year, they said, coach, let's do this. And I didn't listen. And it wasn't for any apparent reason, except I felt a certain way for a certain reason that ended up being incorrect in five scenarios that were very tough games and could have changed our season with, by the way, six players of our top nine who never played Division I basketball.
Wow.
Our last game, we were battling for third after losing 8,500 points in the previous 2 years.
Coach, let me ask you, speaking of disagreements, what is the best way? Because I get this asked a lot, like from assistant coaches, like that they don't necessarily, and I got asked this just this past weekend, how do I approach my head coach about something I don't agree with? Again, not out of disloyalty, just out of, hey, I think this can really help us, you know, that type of thing. So what's the best way?
Here's how we do it. A couple different ways. Number one, when we have a gathering and I actually ask a question that needs their opinion, it's either give me your opinion, elaborate a little bit more maybe on what somebody said that they didn't say, but don't repeat what they said in another way. And instead of that, just say, I don't have an opinion. What these guys said is good. I don't have an opinion. Because if you start muckying the water with jibble jabble that means nothing, number one, it doesn't say much for you. And number two is that's not needed. And then, for instance, Wajid Aminu, I didn't like him. Those dudes loved him. I didn't want him. Those dudes wanted him. It was 4-1. So I said, you know what? Okay, if you guys really want him that bad and you think he's that good, I think he stunk this summer, then get him to elite camp. Get him on campus. Let's see him against these guys. Let's put him through the work, and then let's go from there. And he ended up being freshman of the year. So as the head coach, the question really is, how does the head coach want to be approached? Coach Kennan came in my office, closed the door, said, Coach, I need to talk to you about something. What is it, Coach? You've said something repeatedly that's not good to be said. I'm not even sure you know that you're saying it. And it's not good for the program. I know where it's coming from. I understand why it's been in your vernacular because of some things that are happening on the outside, but we can't let that infiltrate what we're doing here. So you got to quit using that sentence.
Yeah, good.
So, you know, I looked at him. I'm like, geez, oh man, I'm glad you said that. You know, I'm glad you brought that to my attention. I'm glad. So, you know, you can do it different ways. People can say different things. But again, as an assistant, how approachable is the head coach? I'll give you another good example. I think we should blitz. Like, I think we should start blitzing in a game scenario. Great. Let's change the blitzing. I don't disagree with you. I think you're right. But don't do this. Like, if you have a philosophy, fouling up three at the end of the game, don't come in a 30-second timeout and say, hey, coach, I don't think we should foul this time. I just got a feeling. Like, we ain't got time to debate. We ain't got time. And we already know what we're doing. We've already have a philosophy. We fouled one time, Chris. We fouled four straight games up three and one. And we beat two teams we had never beaten in the history of the school. It was the year that we made the run to the championship in 2011.
Right.
But so I think there's a time and a place. I think you have to have a very, very good handle on the head coach. For instance, I know Van Gundy was a note guy. So put it on a note, slide it under my door. I like it on my chair. if I'm not here and there's something you want to show, put it on my chair, because no one's ever going to sit on something on their chair. So the guys know, don't put it on my desk. Don't put it, like, put it on my chair if there's something you want me to see or something you want me to look at. But if you want to talk about, like what Bobby did, which sounds like what this assistant was talking about, come in, close the door. And then lastly, Chris, don't say that it's your opinion. Have some
evidence to support it.
Yeah, some why. Yeah. Like, not just because, well, because that's what I think.
Right.
There's six of us that think differently. But it's affecting the team. It's affecting you. I mean, the way Bobby laid it out, it was like, okay, that makes sense. Then I told him at the end, look, you got to help me, because you got to, like, make sure I don't repeat it again. Tell me again. If I do say it, stop me and say, hey, coach, did you really mean to say this? Whatever it is. So that's kind of how we deal with that.
Yeah, no, the note system is great. And I even find in any communications in my life nowadays, if it's something that's going to be a change or maybe a surprise or maybe a shock, seeing it first before the conversation helps so much to remove the emotion and formulate thoughts and help you have a real conversation that leads to actual change.
You can't read this, but on W, it says, supposedly by studies, we get 5+ surprises per day. There's no level of size. It's just a surprise. So for instance, I come in today and there's a thing sitting on my desk because Enterprise forgot to take taxes off. So we're a tax-free university. I got to make 2 phone calls. I got to get this thing done because we get in trouble if we have that. We got to pay for it out of our own pocket. So that, I mean, there's stuff happens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, every day there's things that just we don't plan for that just occur.
So trying to formulate a staff that works for you, that's one way to sustain success. Coach, what's another way?
I think the other thing is, I think you have to know who you can coach. I think too many times people will like to go quick fix, which we didn't. We built it mainly through high school, and then we flurried in some transfers. And those were the most successful guys. And then one of the guys that helped lead us to the championship was a Juke transfer. But he was good as a junior, but he was really special as a senior, was all tournament. Still playing professionally in Spain. But so I think you really have to have an understanding of who the coach can coach, who the coach wants, who fits into your system. You got to be able to shoot threes for us. We had a point guard for a while that couldn't shoot at all. And we weren't as successful. We really could guard. But, you know, we were losing 65 to 63. And so that's huge. So I think you really have to know that. And we have a different academic situation here as well, too. So I think when you get into the recruiting aspect of it to sustain yourself, and this is why I thought we took not a huge step back, but I thought we missed 2 classes back-to-back during our run. And part of it was nobody was going to play because we were loaded with freshmen and sophomores and juniors. So that kind of played into it as well, too. But I think you have to – at that point, I thought we should have gone more transfer, because then they could have sat out, which happened for us the following year. And then we were able to ended up being a great starter for us, kid from Ole Miss, who just came right in and fit right in. He should have came here straight out of high school, but he chose to go high major first. But so I think one of the biggest things in sustaining success is making sure the talent that you're bringing in is continually improving and fits into what you do and can really, you can piece those parts together. Like right now, Chris, we have all freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. We have no seniors. So we have no scholarships. So now we have to massage that and figure that out. We have 6 returning, 11, not double digit, 11 plus point per game league scores. 6, which tells you we score a lot and we share a lot. But I think to sustain success, you've got to continually build that recruiting, and you've got to be able to manipulate that transfer, that Juke. This is another good one. We got 2 Juke 3-year guys. Had we not got them, we wouldn't be where we're at now. One averaged a double-double in the league, was newcomer of the year, and the other one should have been newcomer of the year. He was 205 assists. He tied a record for most in school history. He was incredible. incredible lead guard, plays for the Puerto Rican national team. He's just phenomenal. But I think staff is critical. And then I think the second part is making sure the guys that you're – so here's the thing, Chris. Our culture is set. The guys who came before on campus, the guys who came before in the locker room, the guys who came before within the athletic department, the guys who came before within the community, like 10 years is a long time. So our culture is set. So these guys got to understand, and we've got to do a good job making sure that they understand. So they have to continue that culture of many hands make light work, good, better, best. And it's not just good, better, best on the court. It's good, better, best in everything, whether it be decision making. And, you know, and we talk about suffering. We talk about suffering together, and we talk about love, and we talk about how critical it is to love one another. This year, our theme is iron sharpens iron. And that came from something we're going to talk about a little bit later. It's another thing, I don't know if everybody does, but I would highly recommend it. And we tell our guys this all the time. If you don't want to know the truth, then don't ask the question. But if you want to know and you ask the question, then right. you got to accept. I thought, is it Brett Brown or Brent? Who's the second? Brent?
Brett.
Brett. B-R-E.
Yeah.
Brett.
Yeah.
Did you see his quote this summer?
No,
his
sure.
quote, we used it with our guys. It's a great quote. He said, May will be a great compass to what August and September is going to look like. He didn't say the season. He said May was going to be a great compass, meaning their end of the season meetings, their where they finished up as its group, who they get rid of, who they bring in. And it was a great way to say it. And we say something similar to that as well, too. But that culture has been laid. So we've got to understand that you've got a responsibility and accountability, because those guys come back and it's amazing. Like Bo practiced with us last year, and our freshmen were like, holy man, coach, he knows everything. He knows every term. And you watch him during practice. He was telling guys what to do, where to go. And so it really helps to me sustaining our success is making sure that culture is consistent. Chris, we get to a place and the coaching staff is the first one off the bus, and we're the first one to take the bags off the bus. Well, coach, make your freshmen. Well, coach, do it. Well, if we ask our guys to serve and we tell our guys many hands make light work, we're not a very good role model. So we're real big on doing things as a unit, as a family, and helping them understand why it's important to clean up your plate area so it's easier for the server to take your stuff away when you're done. How important it is to say please and thank you, and just all those little things. To me, when the game gets tough, those things help you win.
Well, in culture, we talk a lot about building it, and we probably don't talk enough, like you said, about maintaining it. Because once you've built it, it's more a question of just keeping everyone up to the standards or the values that you have within your program. And, you know, and that's a part of success. And obviously passing it down from player to player, generation to generation, coach, that's a part of the process.
That was one of our deals 1 year. That was one of our themes. And it was basically be the standard. And it talked about, it got stuck in another one. You know, be the standard for the program, be the standard as a servant, as a student, as a teammate, and then lastly, as your athlete. But this was 4 years ago. I think this was right after the championship year, I think. So our culture had come around and has gotten to certain things. You know, we used John Gordon's book that he was a co-author of. He actually lives here and he actually autographed it. But we used one word, that book, one word. And we had each guy define himself by one word and then they had to explain it. And we put it in this thing and you hit a button and like every word's on here 10 times. Every guy's word, every coach.
Yeah.
But a good example, the kid we were talking about, Dallas Moore, this was his freshman year. His word was seesaw. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. Where'd you get that? Why'd you think of that? And he said, well, my dad, all the great players I know, everybody always says that during your freshman year, it's going to be tough and it's going to be a lot of up and down, a lot of up and down. So first word I thought about is I used to love when I was a kid going to the park and play on the seesaw, going up and down. But my point is, so in that culture part that we talk about, we have these different things that we talk about, these different themes that we talk about. 1 year was why, you know, we use the why thing. And we talked about what's your why and built that up. And then last year, we kind of took the Spurs circle that they do, but we put our own words in it. And we used, you know, certain things that we talk about. So we used that. And this has kind of been, when we won the championship, my wife, Carrie, God bless her, she's awesome. I started talking about being 1-0 at some point down the stretch. And it's just about being 1-0. And so she went out and she got like 1,000 pieces of paper photocopied with 1-0 on it. And she gave them out in the student section and they started holding them up. Well, some guy saw us. So by the time we got to the championship game, this guy here who owns this company, he made them and everybody in the stands had them. So now it's become part of our culture. And just some people say win the day. It's the same thing. But then this year we're going with something that looks like this and it's iron sharpens iron. And then underneath it, it says value your pursuit. And I think this is where we probably grasp easier as people. But do you have a value in what you're doing? Do you have a value in your daily being a servant and making a difference in people's lives? Do you value having a daily going to the classroom and getting educated? We had another 3-5 this summer. We're really, really fortunate, and we recruit players that are serious about their degrees. Do you value your teammates? Do you value your coaching staff? Do you value what it takes extra? So that's kind of our deal.
Well, and that's great. That's great, Coach, because that one particularly connects back in your circle concept to celebrate small victories, which is value your pursuit and then celebrate those small victories along the way, which, again, bring attention to things that you value in your culture.
So we did these probably for the last 6 years, 5-6 years, and basically these are 5 questions that go along with our theme. And basically it's, how will having your iron sharpened impact your ability to achieve academics? How will having your iron sharpened inspire you to help cut down the debts on March 10th? And then it talks about our culture, and it talks about being a human being, and then it talks about adversity. And then we have them right. We actually have them right, which is probably not too many students in America right. And it's amazing how hard it is to read their handwriting. But what I do is we do them as a staff, so mine's typed.
Good. I would type it too, yeah.
To give them an example of what I'm thinking and then what the staff's thinking, they have their own. So we do this exercise, and then we take their answers, and we put them on one piece of paper without their names. And we pick out, we highlight keywords, and we show them. And then we come back to them. And what's crazy is, at the end of the year this year, there was a disappointment in the staff, in the players, that even in the community, administration, everybody was disappointed because we had won so much, 2 of the last 4 championships, played in a championship game 2 of the last 3 years, semifinals all 4 years, all that kind of good stuff. But we had set the standard so high, the bar so high, the expectations so high. And I'm a big believer of the elephant in the room. Let's talk about it. Let's not hide from it, you know. And because of that, I think we were all like, you know what, maybe we didn't achieve quite as well as we probably could have. And defensively, it was the worst year we ever had. It was our worst rebounding year. So there's a correlation between the two. If it's those 6 guys that never played Division I basketball, that had something to do with it, probably. But we didn't tell them that. We don't let them talk about that. However, what we do is we have these end-of-the-season meetings. And this is what I was going to get to you.
So this is part of your maintaining success is evaluation, right? Review, evaluation.
So we have these sheets we do, and we fill them out. And we're very, very, very blunt. Like, here's what you need to do. Body fat, body, strength, shooting, mentally, whatever it is. I mean, we're very distinct. It's actually not even one page. It's probably a third of a page. And it's simple. And then we bring them in, and then we just start talking. And we always have a staff member, maybe 2. And we put all their answers and everything that came about, we put it all on one piece of paper. And then we share it with them without a name. And Chris, I'm telling you, that's where our theme came from. One kid said, we failed each other. And he said, not the coaches to the players, not the players to the coaches, but the players failed the players. because our culture is so high. They had an unbelievable connect, with each other. But when they got on each other, it became more defensive. So now people were like, well, I don't want to stir the whatever. And they allowed that to seep into certain scenarios on the floor that hurt us in some of those games that I was talking about, where possibly, bada bing, bada boom, maybe we're second, Lipscomb's third, or we're third, and JU's fourth, and yada, yada, yada. So it was amazing. They verbalized it. And one of the freshmen said, Coach, last year's knees, I remember distinctly saying that we had to make sure we held each other accountable for everything we do on the floor. And he said, I'm not sure I'm the one that said it, but I remember it being on that paper, and I remember we talked about it, and we didn't do that. And he said, so we didn't even live up to what we said we were going to live up to. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, wow, like that was way more impactful and had a better – you've heard before, you reap what you sow. Well, when you hear that, you always think, I'm going to sow it, and then whenever it's supposed to grow, it's going to grow. So if it's supposed to be 2 months, then it's going to be done in 2 months. It's supposed to be 3 months. But in reality, you reap what you sow at the appropriate time, because it says you'll reap a harvest at the appropriate time. And that was a big thing for us when we won the championship. As a matter of fact, people had it as posters up in the stands. You reap what you sow, you reap what you sow. It's pretty cool. But it's so true in this that maybe we just weren't mature enough. Maybe we weren't attuned enough. Maybe as a coaching staff, we failed them as far as helping them understand that, whatever it is.
What do we do to, like, or how do we educate players, or what are players able to do with each other to hold each other accountable? Within different programs, it's different things, right? Like within some programs, you yell at each other. Some programs, you're allowed to make substitutions. Or what are players actually able to do to hold each other accountable?
So I think it goes player to player first off, just like a coach. So some players, for instance, if you're a player that grew up in a family with no brothers and sisters, so you're the only child, there's an only child syndrome that comes into play. No one ever talks to me this way. No one's ever combated me this way because I've never had a brother or a sister. So now automatically, and that was part of it. We had one of those scenarios with us where I had to explain to some guys, listen, here's what you need to do. You need to pull them aside. You need to talk to them in a scenario that's not conflicting. And you need to explain to him, look, now you only get to do it once. If it's a repeated offense and it keeps happening, then now you're going to have to call them out. Now you're going to have to do something different, because discipline is when an action doesn't reoccur. So obviously what you did wasn't good enough if it keeps reoccurring. But if you jumped on his throat the very first time in front of everybody and he's defensive, then every time somebody jumps down his throat, he's going to be defensive. Because so I think there's certain ways you have to be able to do it. And the other thing on the flip side is, I think it's almost more important to educate the guys being criticized than it is the guys, how do you criticize?
100%, Coach, 100%.
Yeah. Because so many people take it so personal. And we don't cuss at guys, and we don't call guys no good mother effer. We don't do that. But I'm very intense, and I'm very purposeful. And we have expectations, and we have certain standards, and we want things done a certain way. So some guys you talk to differently, and other guys you talk to differently. Some guys you just punish and either push tires or do 22s or whatever it is. And then you talk to them separately at a different time. So to me, I think because of our culture, because of our lack of being able to communicate, because of the fact that we're on Fortnite, we're on this all the time, we're not doing this. So therefore, and especially if you're, you know, we got four only children on our team. Four. That's a lot. So never had anybody live with them. Never had anybody, you know, in the house with them besides, you know, mom and dad, and they were working anyway. So they were really home alone all the time. So I think the guys being talked to I think they're the ones that need the training as coaches. So I pull that kid. Listen, here's what's going on. You just don't it's critical. Like in the game, like this is a drill in practice. There's a scenario that came to my mind. He screwed up and made us do the drill over. And somebody else screwed up later. Well, they jumped him because it was almost done and he just missed a layup. He couldn't wait until somebody, he didn't even care about anything else anymore. He was so focused on somebody please screw up so I can jump down there so I can get even. So we had to talk through that and help educate him to become a better receiver of criticism. And they, what is it? 55% body language, 35% tone. So what is that? 90? I'm all, you know, for me, I'm 90 in the hole to begin with. So we explain that to the guys. It's not personal. It's about the moment, being between the black lines, trying to be successful. The game doesn't stop. Do the next right thing. That's another one of our cultures. Do the next right thing. Do the next right thing. So I think we have to educate the receiver probably more than the person dishing it out.
No, it's no question. You have to explain to people that criticism is not negative. Inherently, in the word, if you look at the definition of the word, it's not negative. It's meant to be helpful. And we've interpreted it as obviously negative and that I'm a bad person or I'm not doing my job as an athlete or whatever that may be. So the education process is so huge in that.
Well, this too, Chris, it's the same in your marriage. It's the same with your children. And we tell that to the guys, you know, that kid specifically, I think he got tired of me explaining it to him that way too.
Coach, having been around you, I know that's one of the things that I believe you do an exceptional job of, is that you connect these sports concepts back to their life. And it's not separate. It's the same. It's like these things that you're sharing on culture or sustaining success, these are things that your players are being taught for life. It's not just about basketball. And I've seen you do that how you connect these ideas. I had the good fortune of sitting on the bench for your game against Louisville there a few years ago. I don't know if you even remember that. But
yeah, we had a three to start the game. Pitino turned around to his one assistant, started mother effing him, and 41-41 at the half, and then the wheels fell off. Yeah, their check cash, though.
Well, that's part of the process. But just saying that, like I certainly have seen it firsthand how you do that. So that's obviously something important to you, to connect ideas to the person, not just to
the athlete. The other thing too is, like I tell the guy, and our staff does a great job with this too, like, listen, if that's your boss, and like, let's just say you're a lawyer, and like, you forgot that you didn't read one of the addendums, and you forgot that he took a stress test. I watch Suits. And on the stress test, he didn't whatever, and there was a huge part of this particular case, and you just didn't, you know, happen to look over all the particular documents, and you lose $1 million or $5 million setup, whatever it is. Like, that dude's going to be like, what are you doing? And it's not, if it's your third time, he's probably going to fire you. If it's your second time, he's definitely going to reprimand you. And if it's your first time, he's trying to figure out so it doesn't happen again. And we try to share that with the guys too. Like, you can't come back at your boss like that.
No, and it's so important, Coach, because in those moments, and probably even throughout their career, they're listening, they're hearing that, but they don't make the connection until much later often, but they do make the connection. And that's why it's still so worth the effort that you put into that. Is that
we use those two words actually perfectly, as you said it. We tell the guys all the time, you're hearing us, but you're not listening. There's a difference between the two. And I thought Curtis Gerald, Bo Beach was probably the best, but Curtis Gerald played for us at Baylor. He was one of those guys, he would let it go in one ear and he would let it go out the other ear. And it would never, ever, ever affect him because he knew what was important and he knew not to let that stuff, you know, settle inside him. And Bo Beach, who's playing in Germany now for us, this became a famous picture. And actually, sadly enough, when we won the championship, that was the picture they ran in the paper, which ridiculous.
Doesn't portray things the way it should be portrayed.
No, but what's crazy is I love him like a son. He loves me like a father. And our relationship is way deeper than this, but he was great at that. You know, he had a bad habit of fouling, and he's a great player. And he would get a silly fouls, and next thing you know, he'd be on the bench. And so in that particular moment, I know that's what I was saying to him because I remember the scenario. sometimes, you know, that's what it takes. And you can see he's intently listening, but he was great, Chris. He, yes, sir. And he knew, but he also knew, and we tell the guys this all the time, I don't hold a grudge. Like, I'm not a grudge guy. Like, you did what you're supposed to do. You did something wrong. You got punished if there was punishment needed. Then we move on. Like, just don't do it again.
Well, and I try to explain to players all the time, like, the only agenda we have is for us to be winning. Like, we want to win in this classroom. We want to win in on the court. We want to win off the court. Like, that's our only agenda. So we don't have time as coaches, nor do we have the energy to hold grudges and to come up with these elaborate schemes that players sometimes, the story they tell themselves, one of Jen's lines, that everyone has a story that they're telling themselves. And it's our job as coaches to tell them a different story or to remind them that the story they're telling themselves isn't true. And that's part of that process that you're talking about there.
And then even more than that, Chris, is I love that. I wrote that down. But not only the story they tell themselves, but we tell the guys all the time. Like, truly, like probably once a week at least, look in the mirror and literally talk to yourself. Because the one person that you can't fib, fool, or lie to is you. Because if you do, you know you're a liar. So you can't, it's impossible to look at yourself in the mirror and say, man, I don't know why coach isn't playing me. No. Look, I know why coach isn't playing me. I'm not ready yet. This kid's better than me. This, and Will Wilson's a great example. He came in the office as a sophomore and said, coach, I want to play more in November. I said, you're not. Well, coach, I want to know what I can do. Hey, listen, at your evaluation last spring and your summer and what you did in the fall, you ain't playing. And I told you that. And I told you he was coming in. You ain't playing. And then, hey, you want to transfer? Great. I love you. You're a great kid. If you want to stay and leave at the end of the year, awesome. I love you. You're a great kid. He goes, no, coach, I love it here. I want to stay. I said, well, listen, if you become a problem, I'm getting rid of you. And just so you know, everyone knows me. And they're going to call me and say, what's this kid like? And I'm going to say, well, so you can do whatever you want to do. He walked out of here. He did what we told him to do. The kid ahead of him got hurt. He ended up playing 22 minutes a game that year and ended up starting the last 2 years of his career as a junior and senior.
And the platform for all of that was honesty, which is what so much of this is. Just being honest with people.
We're not going to not play guys. Like, we're trying to win, like you said.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully you have 12 guys that are really good, and then you got a really good problem.
Speaking to the mirror, the thing that I say is that nobody can give you permission to feel bad or to feel depressed or to feel angry without you giving yourself permission. Like, you give yourself the permission to feel a certain way, but you can also take away that permission for yourself so that you are in control of how you feel. And all these things are natural. Like, there's not one player that goes through my program in a year that's happy all the time, right? That's natural. You're going to be, there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs, there's going to be great moments, and then there's going to be struggles. Yeah, even the great ones. No, I know the great ones aren't always happy with me. That's part of this. So it's our job, again, to tell them the story that is actually happening and then be honest. And I love that part of it.
Yeah. Also, Chris, it comes back to what you said earlier, which is they come back 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, you know, and they're like, I mean, I just had this with yesterday with one of our guys. You know, it's coming to fruition now, what we had said a while ago. So that's important.
Yeah, no, it's incredibly important. And as you said, it's a process. Like, we all want everything to happen right away. We want that freshman or that sophomore to change right away. It doesn't happen right away. It happens over time. And that's what you see in good programs. And that's what you see when you sustain success.
And I speak, and I'm going to speak here this afternoon to the RAs on campus. And we live in that microwave society. That's how I say it. You know, they want to push 1:30, hit start. And then when that minute 30 is up, boy, it's all good. It doesn't work that way, man.
No.
Not life. And you bring up a valuable point, too, because you try to pour into these kids as much as you can, your own children, as much as you can. But in the end, you realize, I've been doing this for 31 years. I could point guys that are the same, the guys that I had at Baylor, same the guys that I had at Clemson, same the guys I had at Wyoming. You know what I mean? They just don't understand that we've been through all this. We've seen all this. We understand all this. So, like, they got experience it themselves too. And you just hope they don't get hurt along the way.
Coach, the slogan I remember from back in the day when I first met you, passion to improve. Passion to improve. That was one of the things that stuck with me through all those years since I've known you. And something that I've tried to live my life through is that motto to always try and strive for improvement. And if I think about you as a person and as a coach, I come back to that word passion. And I think anyone that's listening to this can hear that in you. And hey, some coaches may not understand what's going on, but go watch the YouTube video, because for this episode, you got to go watch the YouTube video, because Coach shared a lot of things in the video as well. So if you're listening to the podcast, great. Listen to it while you're mowing the lawn, but then come back and listen to or watch the video. So,
you know, when we got here, UNF stood for in the community 10 years ago, you never finish. And when I first got the job, it really, really, really bothered me. And I thought, how can we change that? So kind of along your lines, if you look at the end of my emails, you can see it on there too. We changed that to urgency never fails. And it goes along with being passionate. And I think the more passionate you are, the more you understand who you are and the more you understand why you're there. We could add opportunities to go other schools during our success run there. But quality of life is always critical, but also too, my passion and our passion carries as well too. It's so critical. And to me, there's five pillars that separate good from great. And it's not the book. It's not Collins's book, even though it's a great book. There's five pillars that separate the two, in my opinion. And trust is by far the number one. People skills is what we talked about is number two. Courage is number three, which I think goes back to the transparency of being able to either talk it or accept it as a coach. Like you said, an assistant coming to you and saying, hey, you got to change this. Like, we can't do this. And then the last two, of course, would be vision. And I said that earlier about if you believe it, you can achieve it. If you view it, you can do it. If you see it, you can be it. And then lastly, was passion. And I think when you have those five things, you can be ultra successful. And again, too, Chris, like, how do you want to term success? Like, how do you want to define it? And I talk about it all the time. If you want it to be rooms in your house, cars in your parking lot, zeros in your bank account, then that's how you determine it. But for me, and I can speak for Carrie as well too, if we can make a difference in somebody's life every single day, and if we can take and cultivate and just really nurture and really, really, really help guys understand their strengths, their weaknesses, their talents, their treasures, and make them become better men, extremely good husbands, great fathers, then we know the byproduct is they're going to be great basketball players because we've poured into them and they've accepted it. So that's really important to us.
Oh, that's outstanding. And Coach, you've made me better in all those areas too. Coach, father.
Well, I appreciate parent, you and the job. Looking things. Forward to yeah. you guys.
I know. Well, again, thanks so much. Coaches, please go check out Coach Driscoll and the University of North Florida basketball program. And if you ever get a chance, you're in the Jacksonville area, please connect with us.
Always open.
Go watch practice. It's well worth the time. And as you see, you'll be connected to Coach's passion and his whole program as well. So thanks, Coach.
Hey, can I leave you with this one last thing?
Of course.
Let's go!
Unbelievable. Coach Driscoll. To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.